Hello, my name is Andrew Dravenga, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Asian Military Review. Welcome to this Asian Military Review Special Edition podcast. Today we will be talking to Stephen Chacko, SES's Director, Product Management, Government, about O3B Empower, the future SATCOM superpower. SES will shortly commence development of its second-generation medium Earth orbit constellation, O3B Empower. Building on the technology, proven and commercial successful O3B MEO operating since 2014, O3B Empower will deliver dramatic levels of increased throughput, flexibility, and secure, resilient connectivity, all with the low latency inherent to its medium Earth orbit location. So why will this carefully designed system of satellites, gateways and terminals work so well? And what kind of global capabilities will it offer government customers in the Asia-Pacific region? Here to answer that question and more is Stephen. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity.
Perhaps you can give an overview of yourself and what exactly SES does.
Sure. My background is in communications engineering and market and product strategy, having spanned roles in both engineering, you know, development and deployment of terrestrial communications and satellite communication systems, as well as some background in software and semiconductor. So I've been with SES for 4 years, principal focus in defining government products offered on O3B Empower. In terms of SES, the company, headquartered in Luxembourg, it's one of Europe's leading space players and have been providing global content and connectivity services for more than 35 years. And we provide satellite services via direct and indirect channels to a large range of industries, video broadcast, mobile network operators, and energy crews and aero markets. And of course, a host of government fixed and mobile networks, which I think we can walk through some examples today. We serve these missions and markets with a current fleet of 70 satellites in two different orbits, geostationary orbit and medium Earth orbit. And connected to these are extensive global ground networks, of course, so full global multi-orbit capability. And, you know, interestingly, we entered the non-geostationary operation MEO with a decade ago, and with O3B, and that had a large impact in enterprise applications and cruise, telecom, and fixed and mobile applications. So as the next step in that MEO transformation, are soon launching O3B Empower, which essentially brings an even more powerful and flexible constellation to the same MEO orbit.
Right. Okay, thanks. So drilling down on that, how does that and SES actually serve its government customers?
Well, we're currently serving around 60 different government institutions around the world, across 30 different countries or so. And that includes large footprint with the U.S. government, which we contract with through our SES Government Services affiliate, a fully owned subsidiary. Maybe you saw our recent acquisition of DRS-GES, which expands our ability to support the future of multi-operator, multi-orbit satellite network integration. And of course, the management and support for this market. That extends into more than just U.S. government, of course. That's our global government strategy, is supporting multi-orbit, multi-satellite. And in terms of the applications we support for them, they span command and control, naval connectivity, aero ISR, as well as disaster response and morale, welfare, and recreation applications.
Wow, that's wide.
Yeah. So if we kind of sum it up, I mean, you know, it's hard to put everything into a single bucket. If we just call it providing connectivity, it really misses the point that, you know, not all connectivity is created equally, especially for really, really demanding applications. And some of those come out of government applications. So yes, we provide, you know, low latency, high performance, reliable connectivity. But we also incorporate requirements beyond those capabilities that are principally designed for commercial customers, up to some of the government requirements for transmission and facility security aspects.
Right. You mentioned that you have a constellation operating in medium Earth orbit. Can you explain that uniqueness?
Sure. I think one thing I would just cast the framing is, you know, people talk about orbit as if that's the only issue. And orbit is definitely a piece of the puzzle. So taking the orbit aside, we have a total of 20 current satellites operating in medium Earth orbit today and have been providing connectivity since the first 8 were launched back in 2014. So unlike geostationary satellites, which operate about 36,000 kilometers away from the Earth's surface. The medium Earth orbit that we've established is about 8,000 kilometers above Earth's surface. So, as, again, just the orbit, any orbit combines a combination of latency, just how long it takes to get up and back to the satellite. Mm. Then some of the things people don't tend to immediately think about is what's called reach of the satellite, or the ability to see a large portion of the planet. The further out you go, the more of the planet you can see up to a limit. But as you come in, you start to see a very small portion. And then the other piece is as you come in from high orbits, you actually get a better use of power and higher throughput for the same given power. So what's interesting here is the combination from the orbit of reach, latency, and throughput. And the reason that's interesting for this conversation is many government applications combine those, you know, a very large reach, let's say a regional ocean or a even larger than that, with low latency requirements and high throughput, and oftentimes in ways that don't fit a consumer grade service.
Right. Thanks for explaining that. So we've now addressed, and you've been talking us through, the current first generation medium Earth orbit fleet, the MEO, which I understand has been in use since 2014, and that is a commercially proven service. And now you're launching the second generation MEO constellation in a few months, O3B mPOWER, built on the success of that first generation MEO. My question is then, what are the main differences between those two?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. It really goes to my point that I framed up before, which is the discussion of orbit, while necessary, is not sufficient to understand the capabilities of any constellation at any orbit. You really need to understand the architecture. There's a lot of talk in the industry around the orbit, but what puts at that orbit is really equally, if not more important, especially in some specialized government requirements. So, you know, from in terms of what we're doing with the architecture, at the very same orbit, at the 8,000 kilometers, is we're putting up something that's quite simply, you know, 10 times more powerful in terms of throughput and capability. And that throughput is also, importantly, radically more flexible. I mean, we could go into a number of the technical details around the current capability, the current constellation that uses steered dishes and our O3B mPOWER that uses phased arrays and such. But at the end of the day, we have far more throughput capability and radically more flexible ways of using it. So how that is extended into our government product portfolio is kind of where the most interesting aspects are for me.
Right.
So if one was just trying to provide internet connectivity, some of these capabilities aren't quite as interesting. But in government, they come to the fore. In our government products portfolio, we separate into two main categories, you know, managed and sovereign. The managed portfolio essentially uses a fully designed and serviced and operated technical stack, our choice of terminals, and lands traffic in our commercial gateways. And, you know, with a fully managed operational staff that basically is a full turnkey solution for a number of applications that we believe serve the market well.
Right.
However, there are a number of government requirements across multiple countries where consumer grade or, you know, or just a fully managed service doesn't perfectly fit what their mission need is. And it could be reach, throughput, or it could be their desire to use a particular type of waveform or modem or terminal combination. So for those markets, we've created the sovereign portfolio, which effectively strips off the ground equipment and management aspect and delivers a custom fit, you know, steered capability. So the ability to steer to a mobile location and adds private gateway and the ability for the customer or program to highly customize that offering to meet the mission that might not fit a commercial grade service. And that includes some of the things I mentioned before about transmission and operational security. In American markets, it's called Transsec and OPSEC.
Okay.
Now, if I were summarizing that, this brings the ability to deliver high speed, low latency, end-to-end connectivity and throughputs up to gigabits, which, you know, we used to talk kilobits, then megabits. Yeah. Now we're up into the gigabit discussion.
Right.
And so some of that, with some of the other capabilities of the architecture, bring some value to the government markets that that we think are unique.
Right. Good. Quick question on the MEO satellites and how they differ from other satellites on the market.
Right. Notice, like if we say MEO satellites, again, I'm going to break us down into the orbit and architecture for anything, for ourselves or for the competition. MEO orbit yields low latency, you know, latency sufficient for all the latency sensitive applications such as voice and video teleconferencing and cloud integration. Those are major focuses for the portfolio in general, not just government. At the same time, we enjoy the high reach I mentioned And this translates not only to be able to route traffic without having to hit multiple satellites within the field of view, but also we need fewer of these satellites, or put a different way, we can concentrate our firepower into a smaller number of satellites and still get continuous coverage. So that allows for, you know, larger, more powerful satellites at the MEO orbit while still maintaining continuous coverage. We actually can do it with as few as 6 satellites at the equatorial plane. We're starting with 11, right, which because of demand for the capacity, as well as the capacity density it gives us. Orbit yields that. And if you add the flexibility of the architecture we just went through, or hopefully I explained sufficiently, you see the ability to define and operate almost up to the capability of a purpose-built government system. So we can incorporate waveform, material requirements, operational and transmission security, as well as private network topologies. It means it's essentially almost a fully private government network, where the only thing it hits is the site itself, and nothing else on the ground is touched by SES personnel or equipment. So, I mean, you can come up with multiple examples, and you could think of like large naval operation in the ocean, and how the reach solves that easily and can land it all down on a traffic gateway and support some of the transmission and operational requirements. And it's not that those systems can't do it. It's just that this is the right tool for that job. Now, in contrast, our competitors, let's say in LEO, again, I have to analyze them on orbit and architecture. We talked about a little bit about the strengths of MEO as an orbit. LEO has different strengths, right? It's not that they're bad, good, or otherwise. Right. They have lower latency, but they have smaller reach as well. So if you're trying to route traffic across a continent or across an ocean, or you don't have the place you need to drop the traffic in the place it's originating, you have to come up with mechanisms to do that, such as inter-satellite links.
Right.
It also, basically, you have more efficient throughput for a given power. That's great. But as I look at how those network pieces come together at the orbit, one can solve these problems, but they might not fit as easily, like the one I said before, the naval operation might not fit as easily into that. So that's the orbit. Architecture is also important, and it's beyond the scope here to try to go into any architectural discussion of a competitor's constellation. But at a high level, you could say, these are largely built for mass market consumer demand, or, they have a tendency towards that. And as you optimize and squeeze efficiency out of any particular application, you often sacrifice some of the flexibility. The bulk of consumer traffic is what's called forward link dominant, where content is served, let's say, from the, quote, internet out to the consumer. And there are certainly applications we all use, including, any of our teleconferencing and voice that's symmetric. One that happens a lot in government markets is intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, so-called ISR markets, where essentially you're just backhauling massive amounts of data continuously from an observed field of view. So that traffic profile is completely inverted compared to consumer. And when you try to optimize to one thing, you sometimes lose flexibility in serving the other. So when, our architecture is actually, I would say, optimized for flexibility.
Okay.
And what that means is we're probably not as efficiently serving some of the consumer mass market with the architecture, but it does fit, especially in government, with some of their particular idiosyncratic requirements that sit around security operations or inverted traffic profiles such as sensor backhaul. So, yes, I guess at a high level, we could say the consumer-grade services are likely going to be well-served by these LEO constellations. I believe O3b mPOWER will shine where the requirements for guaranteed performance, gigabit throughput, enhanced flexibility and control, and some of the support for the government, transmission, operational, and material requirements exist.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, drilling down a bit more on that, stated what you can do. Can you now give specific examples, perhaps, of governments that have benefited from O3b and will probably benefit further by the take-up of O3b mPOWER?
Sure. And I kind of opened it or led the witness, I would say, to the ISR right. discussion, which we are currently working with a number of governments, including countries in Europe and the US DOD, in a range of applications. But a particular interesting application is the ISR. And the reason for that, again, is what I pointed to before, is that most of the consumer applications and things that are optimized to serve consumer don't fit this. Currently, that market is constrained by, the lack of dedicated high throughput connectivity that is the opposite of the consumer pattern.
Yeah.
So some of the next generation UAVs, if you look at the sensors that are coming out, not only the sensors themselves, but the number and type of these sensors, they keep adding more and more sensors of different types. Each of these UAVs can generate over 100 megabits per unit. And right now that capability it continues to grow and it's become kind of a center point of many governments.
Yeah, it's only going to go one way, isn't it? It's just going to keep increasing.
Well, that's our bet, I'm for certain. And we think it's a great fit for MPower, and importantly, not a great fit for some of the other competitors because of, their architectural and the orbit and architecture we just walked through. Why we think this is important is the combination of large geographic, reach, the desire to the asymmetric traffic profile, and the desire to, let's take that sensitive traffic and not land it in a commercial gateway. You might not want that landing in a mixed traffic location. You might want it landing directly into a government location, right, with government staff. We can support that. The orbit helps. Because of the large reach, we can see something like the size of an ocean and land it at a sovereign site in a nation. And then the architecture helps because we can run that with an entirely dedicated subnetwork that uses a specific waveform for that. And we've actually shown this in our recent demonstration for General Atomics, partnership with our partner Hughes. We delivered a very high throughput link using a small aperture and terminal. That's an existing small aperture terminal. We didn't have to go develop a brand new one.
Right, right.
And maintaining constant connectivity across that. And further, because of our MEO GEO fleet that we have both, we actually showed transitioning from the MEO orbit back to GEO and then and back again, showing the combination not only next generation terminals and support for some of the current and future throughput needs, but also what's coming down in a lot of requirements now are multi-orbit resiliency. So we demonstrated that. We think that that's a pretty powerful statement of our place in this market.
If potential customers are hearing about this and they like what they hear from you, what do they need to do now for connect with O3B MPower?
Well, it always just comes down to contact us. I mean, we will take it from there. Whether you're an existing customer, of course, we're interested in talking to you about the benefits of upgrading on the existing O3B service, or a new customer wanting to learn more. We have a bunch of material on websites, and we certainly can get someone into a live conversation if that's what's desired. If you want to learn more about it, we're eager to talk to you.
I'm sure you'll get contact after this, Steve. Thank you very much for coming to talk to us. That's Stephen Chacko, SAS's Director of Product Management for Government, and he was discussing O3B MPower. I hope you enjoy this podcast, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.